Live from the 6th and Peabody Studio and across the OutKick Network, this is OutKick 360 with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates and ready to go, OutKick 360. Friday edition is here from 6th and Peabody with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. The crew is all here and many more in studio with us. The Friday before the long weekend. Happy July 4th weekend to everyone listening or watching across today's show. Jam-packed one. It includes Josh Pate. Late Kick Josh will be with us a bit later in the show. He was out in Los Angeles as early as yesterday. He was out there for Elite 11 and was out there as everything went down with the Pac-12 and conference expansion to the Big Ten between USC and UCLA. Josh Pate joins us in hour number three today. In the middle of all of it is a lot of litigation, both in college and NFL avenues. And Amy Dash will join us from Odyssey. She's the legal analyst there. That's in hour number two. Coming up in 20 minutes, Bobby Carpenter will join us to talk from a Big Ten perspective, the addition of USC, UCLA, and much more. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
What a day, boys. What a day. What a day to be alive going into the long 4th of July weekend, but also you walk around 6th and Peabody here, and everyone that I spoke to before the show, first thing they said was, not a slow time of year for you guys with the news yesterday. Business really picking up with the USC-UCLA news from yesterday, which we know a year ago was Texas-Oklahoma. That precipitated this move now. Now, what does this trigger for the SEC or other conferences? This is just another domino of many to fall. So this is the first of a lot of news to come.
So much speculation about who goes where now, what happens next, the ultimate look of two super conferences or three. And Deshaun Watson verdict, I should have tried to bet money with you, Chad, because I had a strong feeling it wouldn't be today, and it's not, because they're taking briefs now from both sides. It seems weird to me that there's another stage to this, but it's going to be decided before July 26th instead of July 4th.
If it's up to Sue Robinson, which it is, that she wants to receive briefs from both sides, they have 3 business days to present those briefs to the judge. However, it appears she's going on vacation or something, and she's had this week off, because instead of 3 business days, she has requested that they be turned in on July 11th and not next Tuesday, which would be the deadline going into Wednesday for the briefings to be on her desk.
So the date now is July 26th, presumably, when the vast majority of the league reports for camp or starts camp. Reports 26, starts 27th, well, I think. They would really like to have it finished by then. I would think that's a target date, though she's not necessarily operating within their parameters.
No, doesn't have to by any means. You're right. Here's the other thing to watch for, and what others will now begin to put out there over the weekend and as they start to really dig into what's going to happen with all this. If he is suspended for the season initially, he will not be allowed to be at training camp or anywhere around the facility. Because if it's a full season or indefinite, then he's off the field immediately. If he is suspended for, hypothetically, 8 weeks, that would go to appeal. He would be at training camp. He could practice all the way up until
week one preparation.
So he will be at training camp. He'll be on the field for the Browns. And he could actually return to the field. Let's say it's upheld that it's an 8-week situation. He could return for practice. Not practice, excuse me. He could not practice. He could return to the facility for meetings starting week five, halfway through, based on the collective bargaining agreement. He can't practice. He can't throw a football. He can't receive coaching. But he can show up and go to meetings, offensive and meetings behind the scenes.
And work out on site.
Work out on site starting halfway through the suspension. So there is a big difference between indefinite full season type hand down and anything less than that. Anything less than that, his contract does not toll, and he can return 50% of the way into it, plus be a part of training camp.
What do we know about the money if the contract does toll and if he's suspended indefinitely? That's the question I haven't really found an answer to.
I have. So he, based on the language in his contract, he is protected
mightily through all this. So the bonuses remain intact. The 1.2 million or whatever it is that's on the on
books,
the
his
books
base.
Right now, his base salary would toll to next year, but the count against the cap would remain whatever it is projected to be right now. Not it's not like it just you pause it and move forward. It rolls back a year. The biggest hindrance for Deshaun Watson is he's not a free agent after 2026. It would move back to 2027. Right. But there's
no financial penalty, really. It's just that your contract is pushed back, so it doesn't make as much.
There is language in this where they the average player, I think it's common knowledge amongst the media and those covering the league, and or if you're knee deep in all this, if you've had a player on your favorite team that gets suspended for a season or a certain amount of time, it's the base salary, but the team can also go back and get part of the signing bonus. There's language in his contract that prevents the Browns from doing that.
Boy, did they.
So like, they have completely handcuffed themselves with this in order for Watson to sign with the Browns, which it's really hard to find any financial pitfall for him other than the base salary. And then, of course, it's a weekly deal where I think it's like $56,000 per week if he's suspended for 8 weeks. It's 1/18th of the season is how you would divide the money.
So if he loses the full season, he's not taking any big financial hit.
He just doesn't, maybe even he less doesn't become the free agent after 2026. It would he's a year older at that point.
But he's still getting the 230 guaranteed.
Yeah. And there's some – I mean, there would be some cap
implications.
Implications for the Browns that could help them next year a little bit. But it's not like it's a ton of money out of the Browns – or out of Watson's pocket.
So the punishment – as we've discussed, money versus games is all games.
Yeah,
in that situation, it's all games.
And I mean, here's a player who hasn't played in this scenario two full seasons and has made $55 million doing so in new money. Made $10 million last year because the league wouldn't suspend him, and now that they will suspend him, he's going to make 46 or whatever it was. That's a part of the signing bonus that's fully guaranteed right now. Now he has not been paid that bonus money yet. He gets paid. The first one, I believe, is coming up July 31st in a $15 million direct deposit. He gets another one that will happen in late fall, early winter. And then the third installment happens in March of next year of the signing bonus that he signed on for this year.
And one of the chief opinionists, I don't know if we want to get into this now, Mike Florio, waffling on this, and one proposal that I thought was ridiculous. And I thought this would come up. I thought it would come up stronger and earlier. This idea, his idea, was to take last year, count it as suspension, add 8 games to it, have him pay back the $10 million that he made last year while he sat out those games. And then count it like as an 17 plus 8, a 25-game suspension, and call it that, have him pay. So a more financially hurtful settlement because he'd pay back the 10.2 he made last year, and then he'd lose, what, half of the 1.2 this year. So at least there'd be a financial knock with it. But I think, and we'd hash this out at another point. I thought there early on, I thought there was potential that the league would do that. That went away quickly, the idea of time served. That clearly was not a suspension. I think that's a foolish idea at this point, and I don't think it's in play. I think it's a wacky Florio idea to go back and retroactively call that a suspension when we were all watching video of the guy on the side field.
So would you guys like to hear the language that the Browns put in his contract?
Yes, please.
I pulled this up from an article I was reading last month. Quote, a suspension by the NFL solely in connection with matters disclosed to club in writing pursuant to paragraph 42, which results in players' unavailability to clubs solely for games during the 2022 or 2023 NFL years, shall not subject player to forfeiture of signing bonus.
Unbelievable. I mean, they just basically laid down and said, you go write the contract. And will sign.
But
it was a reverse contract.
The sad part for the Browns is that that's what they felt like they had to do to get the guy to go.
Oh, it's absolutely what they had to do.
He didn't want to go to Cleveland. This is what they did to say, well, this is what it'll take to get this quarterback who's under immense scrutiny from the league and legally right now to want to play for our professional football team is to give him the world. And that's it. If not, he's wanting to go to these other places.
And really, Chad, that's mostly about what? It's mostly about weather and wind. Because the teams he was looking at...
Yeah, you're right.
...are all worse than the Cleveland Browns in terms of roster. Atlanta, way worse. Carolina, way worse. Who was the other one? Washington?
The whole thing...
I mean, there were... Seattle was interested, but he wouldn't even consider
But those final four that Cleveland... Or five that Cleveland was first out of... Is a better franchise. It's hard to say because the Browns have been so bad for so long. But right now, with Stefanski coaching them and the roster that they have, it really was the best option. The thing that made it worse is that it's cold and windy.
It's setting the legal stuff aside and everything else going on around Deshaun Watson. There are some red flags here about him as a competitor and player. Within this. And that's one of them.
Well, his willingness not to play last year, too, is
willingness not to play an entire season. And also, you're going to cross an NFL team off your list because of weather?
Geography, yeah.
Do you want to win or not? I mean, is this about where your condo faces the east and the sun comes in at the right direction and you've got a comfortable temperature when you walk around outside? Or do you want to win a damn Super Bowl?
I mean, a lot of good quarterbacks have played in, you know, Green Bay and Boston.
Whatever his excuse was, it worked.
This is where I'd probably be terrible at, you know, wooing a football player to come play for my team if I'm in on a meeting at any point with them. Because if I know I have the stronger football team for the immediate future, I got a hard time not telling a guy if I'm in Cleveland or Buffalo or Kansas City or wherever, just go. Like, go fail with the Panthers. Leave. Get out of my office. GTFO.
Yeah.
We don't need you. We don't want you. If you're not the type of person, if you're going to sit here and tell me the wind is a reason you're not going to come play for my team, I sure as hell am not writing that contract up for him that's going to give him whatever he wants to come to your team.
Yeah, because look at...
I hope Tyler Castle, our resident Browns fans, is fired up as I am about this.
I'd say look at Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and their circumstances. They're doing just fine. They're making a ton of money.
Exactly.
They're making a ton of marketing money. And half the league, by the way, isn't in Miami. You know? Isn't in these luxury cities
in a dome, though.
That you want. Yeah, that's true.
But again, he's talking about the Texans... You know, I was never going to win big with the Texans. How many divisions did they win?
Yeah.
When he was there?
Yeah.
Where did he want to go again? Miami? Because they've done so much winning? This isn't about winning.
Right.
This is about Deshaun Watson going where he wants
comfort
and being
money.
Comfortable. And I mean, red flag. I think he's a great player. And he has produced when he's been eligible and played. Red flag. This is not going to end well for Cleveland.
That said, if you're a Cleveland Browns fan and you've watched that jersey on the front page of the Cleveland Plain Dealer or on their website for years and years with the 17 quarterbacks, you know, pinned down the back, you know, if you could set aside the legal stuff, which is hard to do, and you say, this guy's a damn good quarterback, and I'm glad my team, setting aside this stuff, finally went and did whatever it takes to get a guy who I know is going to be good.
Well, keep this in mind, too. 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago now? It was 2020, September of 2020, or was it 2019? 2020. Right as they're going into week one, the Texans practically gave Watson the same type of treatment to keep him happy. And then the following off seasons, whenever he demanded, he wanted out. September, right before week one of September 2020, they gave him a four-year, $160 million extension with a no-trade clause, meaning he got to approve wherever he went.
So let's recount
So he got the signing bonus in September, and by December, the final game where the Texans nearly beat the Titans, where the Titans had to win that game to win the division for the first time in how many years? Sloman hit a kick off the upright that won the game. And that was the game, that was Watson's final game as a Houston Texan. And that was 4 months after they gave him a four-year extension with a big signing bonus for $160 million total with a no-trade clause. They bowed down to him too. And then months later, he said, I'm out. I want to be traded. David Culley sat in here on Monday and told us he knew from the first Zoom call with the guy that he wasn't going to play. And now you've had all the legal ramifications. So we should also throw the Texans in the mix here, too. The Texans did the same thing at the time, it's based solely on the talent of this player, and that's what the Browns just did too, solely based on the talent. The Texans wanted to keep him, did so, and rightfully so. He's a top five guy just based on sheer play that was on a really bad team, and he re-signed for the money and still wasn't happy because of the organizational
failures. Yeah, let's revisit what went south there. I mean, it was the end of O'Brien, yes?
It was O'Brien's final year.
All right. O'Brien getting the GM-ship certainly was the thing that fractured the franchise. He traded DeAndre Hopkins for nothing. That was a disaster. So was it just the general direction of the team that had Watson so upset that in the matter of months he went from signing a long-term contract to wanting out?
I'm
just trying to remember.
Yeah, there were just rumblings of the final week that he was not happy with the direction of the front office. And
keep in mind
they had just traded DeAndre Hopkins for scraps at the table in return.
Bad running back.
His best receiver's gone. Return. Yeah, they get David Johnson in return, but David Johnson hasn't done anything. And then they end up that season firing Bill O'Brien. Romeo Crennel was the interim head coach going into week 17 on a 4-win team with a top 5 quarterback. And he had just signed an extension, and his top wide receiver's gone, and the organization, the direction that he wanted, wasn't there.
Typically.
It's a bizarre setting considering the extensions that we see at quarterback and how you generally don't see it end months later.
Typically, that guy would be able to assert some power in the direction of the franchise from there. And that's where the Easterby and the overbearing Caserio and all that stuff come. And it's an inept franchise at that point. I think if it had been a more normal franchise and included him, you don't let him hire the coach, but you include him in conversations about the direction of the franchise and all of that stuff. You try to repair things quickly after he's frustrated at the end of the season. And he's a more reasonable guy that settles down better. Yes, you're frustrated at the end of the season. You go away for a couple weeks to Cabo and you come back and you're like, all right, let's piece this thing back together, which is what most leader quarterbacks do. It fractured on both ends to an unreasonable degree. You're right. That's the beginning of him getting all this hand.
Yes.
Too much hand.
He's had it since.
He's had the most hand of anybody.
And he has not played a game since then. Coming up, Bobby Carpenter join us. A lot to discuss with B. Carp on what is happening with the Big Ten expansion, USC, UCLA, what it means for the Pac-12, what the Big 12 now does moving forward, and how about the ACC, SEC? We discuss it all with Bobby Carpenter next on Outkick 360. Outkick 360 rolls on with one of our favorite guests each and every week, Bobby Carpenter. You can follow him on Twitter at bcarp3. Catch him on SiriusXM, as well as up in Columbus, talking some radio and sports radio, that is, and plenty to talk about right now as he joins us from his parents' home in a backdrop that I believe has a senior photo of one Bobby Carpenter over his left shoulder. Bobby, good to see you, man.
Oh, it's great to see you guys. Yeah, I was trying to find a good angle to get some light, have everything set up the right way. And I was trying to get one behind me. My dad's got all his trophies and game balls. And he's got all his trophies and game balls all over the place. So, unfortunately, I couldn't get that arranged. So the best I guess you're going to get is a senior picture of maybe me or one of my brothers back there.
Your thought, but this time last year, whenever Texas and Oklahoma was beginning to be all of the discussion right before SEC Media Days, there was talk about USC and the Big Ten then. But when you saw the news yesterday break, what did you think about USC, UCLA, and the Big Ten partnership now that it is official in 2024?
Well, I think there's no loyalty among thieves. When you talk about, the alliance and people working on things together, I don't know how any of these ADs could potentially trust each other at all, working towards something, try to put a playoff together or talking about anything, given the fact that like all of them are Game of Thrones style, slowly moving pieces. And even some of the schools, and it's not always just the commissioners, but, the ADs, and they're figuring out what's best for them. So I know we talked about this. I don't think the Big Ten was real aggressive. They said that, the UCLA and USC approached them, which, I believe. I don't think Kevin Warren, was taking the lead and trying to get anything done. Heck, he was in London. I don't think it's by accident that the first people you heard talk about this of any official nature were Gene Smith, the AD at Ohio State, and Christina Johnson, the president of Ohio State. They're the ones who are probably the ones who helped put it together. USC's AD was at Cincinnati. UCLA's AD, Martin Jarman, he was at Ohio State with Gene Smith. So I feel like just kind of connecting the dots and reading the tea leaves that, Ohio State was pretty instrumental in kind of driving this decision home and helping to get it done. But, when I think about this and everything that happened, I never would have imagined a year ago, 20 years ago, that you would have schools from the Pac-12, like charter members, iconic brands like UCLA and USC, ultimately join the Big Ten. Like, that would have seemed like such a foreign concept. But in this age now where regionality doesn't seem to matter anymore with regards to college athletics, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Well, and Bobby, I believe this is headed to a 20 or 24 team two-party system, and the two parties will be Big Ten and SEC, and those are going to be the two power conferences that run college football, with probably, when all said and done, 24 teams apiece, more than likely, or at least 20. So if we go with that premise of this is not over and an expansion will continue, who should be the most aggressive right now? Is it a remaining Pac-12 or Big 12 or a current ACC team going after the Big Ten or the SEC and trying to jump on board? Is it the SEC and Greg Sankey in response to this move that needs to get aggressive with who they add next? Who do you think should be aggressive right now for their own either domination or survival?
Well, I know this. Greg Sankey doesn't take anything lying down. So he's been analyzing all these moves. He's seeing exactly what's happening and what potentially is going to – what their next move could be. If you're a school in the Pac-12, I guarantee right now, especially with the rumors, and I do believe that it will happen, that Washington and Oregon will be joining. And if that's the case, like, the Pac-12 is going to be a shell of itself. So if I'm Arizona, if I'm Arizona State, if I'm Colorado, if I'm Utah, I'm calling the Big 12. You throw those schools in the Big 12, that's not a bad conference. It's a pretty good situation. So I think that they need to be ultra aggressive. They can't afford to sit there and sit on their hands. Like I said, Oregon and Washington, I've been told from people out there that announcement will be coming early next week, that they'll be petitioning to join the Big 10 as well. And then it comes down to that's 18 teams. Like, I think the Big 10 at that point will probably begin to have serious conversations potentially with Notre Dame, and who do they pair with them? Do they, ultimately try to pull a Stanford in? That's where the Ohio State's president, Christina Johnson, is from. It's where she's an alumnus. Do they go after like a North Carolina and you start poaching from the ACC? Because that's one thing Commissioner Phillips down there with the ACC, like, it seems all well and good. They've got, all their teams and they just reconfigured their scheduling, but make no mistake about it, I think that he's understanding, like, their television deal is very prohibitive to get out of, but it's also not near as good as what the Big Ten or SEC are going to have. Both of the conferences, it's going to be in excess of $100 million now. So I think Greg Sankey's probably analyzing, like, who could I add that would make sense that will boost the value? Because we're not interested in cutting up the pie anymore. We want to bring in someone that can not only stand alone, but can also enhance value via market and via competition. And because Clemson seems like the logical school, but you're already in there with South Carolina. They're a great program, but I don't think any of the SEC members are interested in losing part of their market share, losing part of their TV share if the pie doesn't grow more than enough to help overcome that. So I don't know if there's anybody the SEC could really add. Maybe in North Carolina you get the Charlotte market. Maybe that kind of pulls that in a little bit more and entrenches a little bit that way. That's kind of the gem as I see it, because I don't really feel like, gentlemen, outside of Notre Dame, that there's another program out there that you can look at and say, hey, by bringing them in, that will elevate the value of our conference so much that everybody will begin to get more money.
Let's go more with Notre Dame. It seems like the time is never going to be more right for them to make the jump and become a member of a conference than now, and that their value, as you're saying, is never going to be higher. Do you think it happens now and that they'll finally kind of surrender the independence?
I think that it's going to happen. You know, I've talked to a lot of guys, Notre Dame guys, and Brady Quinn is, you know, it's a Columbus native, played against him in high school. You know, I know him really well. He's, you know, best friends with his brother-in-law. Like, we've had conversations about this, and his thing to me was he was adamant that Notre Dame would never join the Big Ten because he was, they're not a regional player. They're a national player. And if you look at who they play, two of their big rivals, Stanford and USC, well, one of them's going to be in the Big Ten. There's a good chance maybe Stanford is as well. And as they look around, as you guys alluded to, you're talking about probably two conferences that are going to be 18 to 20 of the most powerful schools. You have the ACC that has a handful over there, but their TV deal pales in comparison. They don't have near the interest of football. So when you're sitting down now to make the rules of what the playoff looks like, and really the rules of what college football looks like at an elite Division I level, it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC that are making most of those rules. And so Notre Dame, like Jack Schwarbeck, you know, he's powerful, but as all of these other schools begin to, you know, condense into these massive conferences, Notre Dame's influence will wane. And so I think they realize, you know what, it's a coast-to-coast conference. It gives us the ability to go out and recruit nationally still. This is probably the time where you'll see within the next year or maybe handful of years, but it'll be starting, the conversation will begin where Notre Dame will probably finally be in the conference by the time we have college football playoff expansion.
Bobby Carpenter, our guest on Outkick 360. Bobby, who is the luckiest in all of this? Is it Rutgers or Maryland for jumping in the boat in 2014 and having the eternal life raft of being in the Big Ten where they would be wanted by none of these conferences right now if this was happening today? Or is it Vanderbilt, who's a charter member of the SEC, that also would be like Wake Forest, that no one's trying to go out and get and bring into their conference right now? Who's the luckiest of those three?
My goodness. I would probably say Rutgers and Maryland, simply due to the fact, gentlemen, that, you know, they athletic departments were in financial disarray before they joined the Big Ten. And one of them, I can't remember who it is, actually upon joining had to borrow against the future value of their television contract to actually pay off some debts. Like, I mean, this is like almost like a gambling addict. Like, you gotta, you're selling your future paychecks here to help finish up some facilities, handle some of your debt. So probably them, but Wake has been intermittently good at football, just like Northwestern has. Vanderbilt's never really probably, you know, had that type of success. Nine wins under James Franklin has kind of been their ceiling. But, you know, you look at a lot of those schools that are near the bottom of these, you know, mega conferences now that have really just been fortunate that, you know, 80 to 100 years ago, they were in the right place at the right time and, you know, had the right ADs and presidents who all, you know, had smoking clubs together and all liked each other, and they formed a conference, and they've just kind of been tagging along this whole time. You know, you throw Illinois and potentially, you know, Northwestern in there in the Big Ten. And because of that, now they get $100 million paychecks every year. So they're very fortunate, but I don't know if they're as fortunate as Maryland and Rutgers, who had really no other option. And by simply the virtue of the markets they were in, were able to join a conference that was going to stroke them huge checks.
Bobby Carpenter with us on Outkick 360. Bobby, we look at the Big 12. They have a new commissioner that started this week. You have the Pac-12. The commissioner there has been on the job for a year. Jim Phillips, commissioner of the ACC. I'm going to look at this from the ACC perspective for a moment, because the official response, a part of the official response from the Pac-12 yesterday was that they were, quote, surprised and disappointed, end quote. If you are surprised and disappointed right now after seeing Texas and Oklahoma a year ago, you're not just losing the race, you're not on the lead lap. Like, you're a non-factor to me as I view the landscape of college football and college athletics moving forward. However, there's the Big Ten, there's the SEC, and here's the ACC. If you're Jim Phillips, what are you doing to ensure that you're not surprised and disappointed like these other conferences have been over the last 12 months?
Well, I think part of it, when you look at this, you know, George Kliatkoff, I think, has done a really good job. I mean, he was handled a flaming pile, a flaming bag of dog turds.
Yes.
Based on what Larry Scott gave. Larry Scott, here's the thing, gentlemen. Like, Texas and OU aren't in the SEC yet because of their television deal, because it was so prohibitive to get out of. USC and UCLA, they're going to be able to walk beforehand without paying a dime. Zero. I mean, Larry Scott set them up for failure. And so I think Madcap has done a good job. If I'm Jim Phillips, what I'm doing is I'm calling everybody that I knew. He was the former AD at Northwestern. I'm calling anyone I know in the Big Ten and be like, listen, is there anybody you're going after? Like, someone give me some backdoor information here. Because when I have my meeting and we have all the presidents and ADs and they're sitting there looking at me in the face and I feel like I'm playing a game of poker, but I can't tell if they're actually bluffing or not when they say we're all in, because 2 days later they're going to be entering a resignation letter. Like, I got to know who the targets are. And so I think that connection probably helps him. But I mean, gentlemen, think about it. Like, Jim Phillips will do everything he can. I'm going to pull everybody together. Hey, this is our TV deal. Maybe we'll try to renegotiate it. At least it's very punitive to get out of. So that's one of the reasons why you look at Clemson, North Carolina, some of these attractive schools, maybe a Florida State, why they're not leaving. Yeah, they could get paid more elsewhere, but it's a very, very steep penalty for exit. So they do. He does have that on his side. I don't know if there's any acquisitions that are out there to be made to help him. Like, who would he bring in? A West Virginia, maybe a Cincinnati? Like, you know, could you go after a Baylor? Like, I don't know if any of those are really moving the needle the way that they need. So I think the best thing he can do is stand pat and hope that he doesn't lose North Carolina, that he doesn't lose a Clemson, potentially a Florida State. Like, some of these big-time members, especially the charter members, because you start losing them, and all of a sudden you'll see an ACC, I believe, that's starting to look a lot like the Pac-12.
Bear with me and tell me if I'm crazy to think this could be a factor in recruiting going forward. I'm a kid going to USC or UCLA. I think of it as the sunshiny conference. Yeah, I'm going to play in some rain in the Pacific Northwest, but I'm playing Arizona State, UCLA or USC. And now I'm going to Minnesota, and I'm going to Northwestern, and I'm going to Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska. That's not what I really was thinking about. And I could be going to Florida and Georgia and Alabama. It's a better weather situation. I think weather can be overrated as a thing, but we know some of these Midwestern schools have been hit by that. Nebraska is not attractive like it used to be for some of these reasons. Am I crazy that could shift the landscape a little bit for some kids against UCLA and USC?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Lincoln Riley, like, he had a bunch of the Southern California kids committed to Oklahoma, and then they all kind of followed him there. I know a lot of schools have done really well in the Pac-12 recruiting region from outside, you know, Big Ten, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia. Like, they've done a good job going in there and getting players. And so there might be some players that it would impact. But I noted this morning, Gene Smith in his press conference, he's like, you're playing in Los Angeles, you're playing in Chicago, you're playing in the New York, New Jersey market. So if you're somebody that views yourself as a national prospect, to be able to get as much exposure now to brand build and do all of those things, you will put yourself now, I guess, in the biggest markets. Is the weather ideal in the Midwest in October, November? Nah, it can suck, guys. I'm going to be real. Like, it gets gray, it gets rainy. It's not ideal. But, you know, you have, I guess, something else to sell with, you know, the national landscape of all that out there to be able to play in these massive markets and hopefully be playing in some of these big games.
Bobby, is there a coach or multiple coaches that with some sway that gets involved with their ADs and their schools and says, get us out of this situation and into the Pac, Big Ten or SEC? Two examples. Dabo Swinney at Clemson. What are you thinking if you're him right now? And the other one, even though he just got there, but he's got some pull, is Mario Cristobal now at Miami. Do you think these coaches, these big-time football coaches, are sitting idly by, or are they going to their bosses and saying, we need to be on the phone being proactive with all of this and not just sitting back?
I do think that both of those guys are fully aware. You know, right now they look like they have a pretty good shot to the playoff. They can, because I, you know, the ACC is going to be included. This isn't going to be a Big Ten SEC playoff. You know, they'll be inclusive with other conferences and they probably have a pretty easy path. So is going to the SEC a better move for them right now? I don't know if they truly want to. And it'd be very punitive. I do think those are two coaches that probably have the sway to be able to get it done. But frankly, like, if you look at a lot of these decisions, I don't think, gentlemen, Lincoln Riley had any idea, or Chip Kelly had any idea, from what I had been told, that they weren't let in on this very, soon at all. That's why I think Lincoln Riley, when he left Oklahoma, like, I don't think he knew that they were going to be going to the SEC. So, he's been duped twice now by his school with potentially moving. So I do think that those coaches have the cachet to do that. I don't know if them moving to the SEC, it's more money, but it might be a tougher path. And I guess I don't know exactly how financially punitive it could be to get out of there. But I do think those are two coaches and probably two schools that should say, hey, we need to monitor this very closely because and have some irons in the fire because we don't want to have something happen where all of a sudden North Carolina moves and now like the ACC is falling apart. We need to have a landing spot. So if nothing else, I would say they need to be at least reaching out and keep some of the lines warm just to make sure that you have a spot to go and be able to gauge interest and how that would potentially work.
Bobby, I know you are well connected and part of a tight-knit group of Buckeyes from your era, right? And probably this era. Of those group texts or DMs or messages, whatever, anybody message you yesterday and absolutely hate it? Or does everyone see where we're headed and what's to come and they're on board?
Well, I'll say this. Like, I hate it. It's good for my conference. Like, I'd rather be at Ohio State than being an alumnus of Arizona State right now. Like, you're looking around like, what are we going to do? So you're in the catbird seat. But, like, for all the movement, Nebraska in the Big Ten wasn't necessarily a fan of that. Like, I liked it when Miami and Va Tech were playing in the Big East. Like, maybe that's just because the era that I grew up in, I'm nostalgic for the fact that, you had, like, six conferences. You had some things spread around, and there was good teams kind of everywhere. There's a certain regionality to it. Like, I like that. I really do. And I think that's what was great about college football. Now, am I going to be like an old man shaking my fist at the sky, being angry about it? Like, that's not going to change it. But that doesn't mean like they have to be all gung ho. And so, like, Ben Hartsock, a teammate of mine, does a lot of stuff on SiriusXM. Like, he's against like NIL. He doesn't like the portal. I mean, I'm like, Ben, you can be as angry as you want. These things are here to stay. Like, there's going to be relocation of conferences. There's going to be conferences that disappear. And, I can't even imagine, like, even if you're at USC, like, all of a sudden now, and I have these conversations with guys at Nebraska, and these are the conversations that guys at Texas and Oklahoma will have. Like, so you are all Big 12. Like, well, what does that mean? Well, it's not the conference you're in anymore. We won, 10 Big 12 championships. What all this? Like, what does that mean? It's like a defunct deal. You're no longer part of it. So, like, you lose a little bit of what you are. And so for Ohio State, they've been in the same conference. Like, it's not going to change them. There's just other schools around them. But I still don't truly enjoy it. And I know a lot of my teammates say, yeah, that's great. It's glad the Big Ten's adding teams. Like, they're going to be one of the power brokers. It's really them and the SEC now. Maybe get Notre Dame in. And, like, that's good for the school, and it's ultimately good for your setting. But I don't know if this gentleman is, like, really good for the college game. I think you could have had NIL and transfer portal and still had, like, six conferences that were pretty nice because, like, they're all just merging together now. Like, the regionality, I understand you can fly, you can do all that. But there was just something nice and nostalgic about it. To me, that's, like, what makes college sports a little more special than professional.
And all of us are fans of the nostalgia of sports. Keep this in mind. I think we could easily say this. We have 2 years left of Power 5 college football on the horizon.
Yeah.
That's it. Or Power 5 sports in general.
It's Power 2 in football.
And two years left based on the TV contracts that are in place, right? So that those could be bought out too. Who knows? Bobby, always great. We will table the discussion on the player dinners and rookie dinners. I know you have a great story to add to that. We will do that next week. We always appreciate you making time for the show, even from your parents' house. Happy 4th of July to you, man.
Hey, man. Cheers. I'll give you guys a little glimpse up here. Oh, that's all my dad's stuff. Like, he's got all kinds of good things around there. So
very cool.
His house is way cooler than mine.
Hey, happy 4th to all the carpenters out there.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Happy 4th.
Bobby Carpenter there. Follow him on Twitter at bcarp3. Coming up, I was flipping through, I don't know if you guys got this in the mail, it was probably a mass mailer, trying to get me to order fireworks. I guess they got my address, this little magazine that tells you. And so I was flipping through it while having dinner recently, and the names of these firework packages that you can purchase are right in line with what Corey or Jacob would want, you know, their band name to be called. We pick out our favorite 4th of July spectacular. And I have a favorite for Chad as well that I think he would sign up for, want to purchase. We get ready for the 4th, plus plenty of guests on deck today. Outkick 360 rolls on. I opened up this firework magazine. First one I saw was the Motherlode, and I just kept scrolling, kept, you know, just flipping through because the descriptions are awesome. Outkick 360 rolls on.
This is a physical magazine that you received.
Yes, and I should have brought this in.
Not anything online.
Nothing online. Maximum legal load.
How much for the maximum legal load?
All these were like over $150, like these full displays. There were $1,200 ones. There were plenty to choose from, but the descriptions, Patriotic Exotica.
That's a good one.
You Betcha is another one. There is Memory Surprise, which is, I mean, use your imagination on that, I guess.
That happens to Jacob Swanson all the time, the Memory Surprise.
There was one called the Jamaican Explosion, which I thought Chad would love.
Jamaican Explosion, good. I could make a joke about that and get the entire country against me again.
But the entire country of Jamaica, not the entire country of the U.S.
Yeah, the U.S. would be behind me.
Battling Elk. Like, all of these were like, man, that sounds like something that will be going off in the neighborhood this weekend.
Battling Elk, I could see like antlers in the sky.
Battling Elk sounds like a town in North Dakota. Like an actual place. Where are you going? We're going to go up to the lake in Battling Elk, North Dakota this weekend. It's going to be great.
We know that fireworks and idiots go together oftentimes.
Yes.
I just hope. I had a friend who's a fireman, so on a serious note, it hasn't rained in central Tennessee in how long?
Middle Tennessee.
It rained yesterday, actually.
Well, I mean, they're dry stuff everywhere,
yeah.
And they're anticipating fires.
Yeah.
Like crazy as a result of fireworks. So I hope people are smarter than usual.
Hopefully we need rain bad around here. It's supposed to rain all weekend off and on. So I'm hoping that actually happens. We had this threat last week too, and it didn't happen, at least where I was.
And there will be shows all weekend because some were moved up to, there's some tonight, there are some, you know, tomorrow because it's on Monday.
Yeah.
They want to start it late, and then if you have it scheduled early in the weekend, you can always postpone it throughout the weekend if it rains.
We'll probably do like the little kids' firework stuff that I can do with them.
Yeah,
I'll go out and just
run candles
on like Sunday. Yeah. Like Sunday evening, they'll stay up late because Monday we have a big family 4th of July where everyone basically throws in like $250 of the family, and we have a huge spectacle out in College Grove, Tennessee, on a farm.
So I've told you about my older dog, Finley, who is fireworks fearful. He's at a point now, this is not fireworks related. You know, we have the puppy, Ripley. So Ripley gets crated when we go out. Finley can't stand Ripley being crated. Finley goes upstairs and winds up in the oddest places. The other day we got home, he was in Simon's hamper. Now, he's got arthritis and two ACL repaired knees. How he got into Simon's hamper athletically is impossible. He must have found his way in there and like bounced it back up some way. But like he finds comfort in these tight spots. So if we leave during a fireworks night, I can only imagine what this guy is going to wind up doing.
Gunfighters from Hell is another option.
Yeah, if somebody's doing that, hunting anywhere near us,
that's going to be a problem.
Finley's going to be in hell.
It's going to be a problem.
Finley will be in hell.
Larry Donald's going to give them hell tonight here at 6th and Peabody. He's part of the main event for TriStar Boxing. He joins us in studio to discuss all the athletes getting into his sport.